permanece a la
movie podcast, and the fella giggling at our music this week is Christian Christian Mistowski. Say that right? Mistowski.
It's Wahlberg.
We also have with us the more stoic fella who wasn't giggling at my choice of intro music is Kelly Wand, also with us.
I couldn't believe how long that music was going. It just kept going for 2 minutes. I thought you're supposed to just, you can fade it in before it's over.
The mouse wasn't hitting the button correctly. That was a technical error.
Okay.
Plus it's a snappy little tune, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah, I guess. It just kept going.
Fast forward over that part, and it sort of evoked the whimsical wackiness of the movie we saw this week, I hope.
Feel good movie.
That's what it
is. Was it composed by Ralph Kent?
I don't know who that is, but no.
All right.
Can I interject something stupid really quick?
Please do. Please do. That's what we're here for.
I don't have a new catchphrase this week so much as a spoiler/non sequitur, but I just want to say my favorite scene in that Hilary Swank, Amelia Earhart movie.
Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not the movie this week. What are you doing?
Just wait, let me finish my bit, and then you can complain.
But you used the word spoiler. Some of us want to see that. Okay, hold on. Go ahead. I'm going to plug my ears while you do this. Okay, go ahead. Go.
All right. My favorite spoiler from the Amelia movie is where she kidnaps the Lindbergh baby and feeds it to a dingo.
I see what you're doing. You're tricking us. Okay, I don't think that happens.
You learn a lot about famous people from these biopics.
I'm going to tell you guys my favorite spoiler from The Box. Are you ready? It's Frank Langella saying, "Ever since then, I've been in communication with the ones who send the lightning." There you go.
Wait, the ones who send the lightning? S-I-N-A-N-A?
Oh, no, control the lightning. That's the ones who control the lightning. I screwed up the line. Right.
Oh, sent. Okay. Wait, start all over again?
Is that a haiku?
"Ever since then, I've been in communication with the ones who control the lightning." But you have to imagine Frank Langella, you know, fresh off his sort of tour de force as Nixon, doing Richard Kelly's next movie and delivering that line.
With like Jeremy Irons when he did Dungeons and Dragons.
But worse, because Jeremy Irons was there. Frank Langella has this horrible CG makeup effect, like Two-Face in Dark Knight, where like half of his face is dissolved off. It's the most random damn thing. Fortunately, this week we're not talking about The Box.
We're talking about another biopic.
Kelly, why don't you introduce it? You pick.
I picked this?
I'm just going to say you did.
It's called The Men Who Stare at Goats. And it starts with the word "the," which to me is always a sign of a bad movie. Because if you, like, Shrimp on the Barbie is a great title, but if you call it The Shrimp on the Barbie, it sucks.
Now, is that true? There's a definite article before this movie. Is that correct?
Yeah, The Men Who Stare at Goats. Okay. The Men Who Stare at the Goats.
That's not true. Isn't it just Men Who Stare at Goats?
I think it's the Men.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I've got the IMDb page right here. You are right.
So you want your eye tricks you into seeing what it wants to see.
Yeah.
But the is there. That's why they took the out of "For the Love of the Game." They just made it "For Love of the Game."
Very good. Okay.
I feel bad for people listening to this right now.
It was called The Star Wars first.
So are you telling us, Kelly Wand, that this is a bad movie? Because it's a feel-good movie about Iraq, about the American situation in Iraq, isn't it?
It is based on a 2005 documentary by a guy named John Ronson called "The Crazy Rulers of the World." And apparently everything in it actually is true, I found out. Except that in RL, the dude who made the goat's heart stop did damage to himself as well, in the words of an army guy. It was a sympathetic injury. I don't have the guy's name. I guess I am Carl Pilkington, but
I hear someone looking this up. There's no looking up stuff on this podcast.
I think we know who our resident Googler is.
And did the movie work for you, Kelly Wand?
No, but I liked little chunks of it. It was kind of like Last Action Hero in terms of enjoyability.
Wow, you had to go all the way back to Last Action Hero to think of an analog to your enjoyment level. You had to go that.
I remember thinking Last Action Hero wasn't good, but when you're watching it, there are like 5-minute stretches where it's almost kind of good.
Okay.
Until the end, and then.
I have to say, Kelly Wand, I feel that about most movies.
Yeah.
Even movies I hate, I can have these 5-minute stretches where I'm digging what's going on. But then once I come out the other end, I can dispense those 5-minute stretches don't really add up to much.
If it's only 5 minutes and you're 45 minutes in a movie, like say Where the Wild Things Are, then the math says you should leave because you're only 1/9 entertained.
And did you stay, Kelly Wand? Have you seen all of this movie or did you leave halfway through like you did with Where the Wild Things Are?
I saw the whole movie and felt gypped in that there's all these amazing male American actors in it, and they're given like nothing to do. Like Robert Patrick's in this. He's a totally underrated actor, and he's only in that one scene in the car. Mm-hmm. And he's, I don't know. And then it gets all schmaltzy towards the end, which I smelled coming, and then it happened, and I was bummed that I was right.
I want to go over to Dingus, because Dingus has been quiet. So here's a dynamic that I am waiting for in this podcast, where one of us, where we disagree dramatically about a movie. That hasn't really happened yet. Maybe Where the Wild Things Are, we were all kind of middling about it, and some of us drew different things from it. But I'm curious, maybe is that going on here? Dingus, are you quiet because you loved The Men Who Stare at Goats?
No.
He can't. No one can love The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Didn't George we disagree Clooney. A little bit on Paranormal Activity, where I was
we disagreed about plot points.
That's the thing. We can have disagreements about plot points, but it hasn't happened yet on this podcast where one of us really digs a movie and the other two don't, or vice versa, two like it and one. And I'm waiting for that to happen, and it's not going to happen with this movie.
Because I want it to, too, and I like a lot of stupid shit.
I do, too. I have notoriously
so
sort
it's
of...
it's odd that it hasn't happened.
Yeah, it is odd, and so that's not going to happen with this movie, I guess. Rats.
And you're always coy about whether you liked something or not.
I just wanted to let you guys go first, and I'm,
I suspect that A Serious Man has ruined my ability to enjoy other movies. Have you ever had that? Like, get the taste of something else, and then everything else sucks around it?
The problem is this movie wasn't stupid enough, I don't think.
It almost was in little chunks, and then it's not. It's based too much on truth. Like, the documentary is more interesting than the movie.
You know what, Kelly? That's a very good point. One of the things I wanted to talk about is why doesn't this movie work better? Why isn't it funnier? Why isn't it sort of harder hitting?
I think because they saw the documentary and they went, this would make a great movie, and so they took out just enough, but then they turn it into a real movie at the same time, and it doesn't – it's got that – every biopic, and I would call this a biopic, sucks for that reason. It's because there's this melding between truth and fiction that you are always guessing, well, did this really happen or not? And it's never satisfying. It never feels – it's never as interesting as the source material. Like reading a book about Muhammad Ali or watching When We Were Kings is infinitely better than watching Ali.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Kelly, did you – you've actually seen this documentary then?
I watched some of it. Then I fell asleep. But it was good. The flaw was with me and not the documentary.
Well, I haven't seen the documentary, Dingus, but I am a huge, as you know, I am a huge fan of Art Bell, which is no longer Art Bell. Now it's various other people who fill in for him. And it has goofballs like the guys in this movie. Like, remote viewing is a big deal on Art Bell. They always talk about that. And they get these yahoos on there who talk about being able to basically, like, astrally project or whatnot. And these guys are immensely entertaining. I love these guys. Bless their hearts. I could listen to them talk forever, but I would rather listen to them talk than watch George Clooney pretend to be one of them, I think. And that sort of gets to what you were saying, Kelly.
I think it would have been more interesting if they'd played it straight and George Clooney really was. Because at the end when...
Oh, God.
No?
No, I agree with you. At the end, it was just... Yeah, I hated the ending. I mean, this whole...
Yeah, I did too. Actually, that's the one part that's true. A reporter actually did phase through the wall of his office. That didn't happen. The rest is fake.
Now, just out of curiosity, guys, where should that have ended? if you're going to have that shot, because I have an opinion about that. If you're going to bother with that last scene with Ewan McGregor in that office, do you think you have that scene at all, or where do you end that scene?
I think it's another girl to replace the one who dumped him and caused all that stupid crap to happen to him.
By the way, real quick aside, Dingus, I want to answer your question.
Sorry.
Kelly Wan, did you recognize the girl that dumped him?
No.
Oh, I thought you watched Lost.
Who was it?
She was the hot redhead on Lost who gets the nose between the eyes. And I was like, I was hoping, I don't think she had any lines, but I loved seeing her briefly. But so Dingus, the question, where do you end the movie, assuming that ending doesn't work? I would have been okay with this ending if I'd known that I was watching a movie about a journalist who gets caught up in his story and ultimately converted over to that viewpoint. I never really felt that. So it felt cheap at the end when it turns out that he becomes sort of one of them and he's just as wacky and disillusioned and just as sort of wacky and misguided as they are. Oh, but look, now he can go through a wall. And I was like, what is that? If you're doing a movie about the reporter's arc where he ends up embracing their perspective, then do that movie. But that's not the movie they were doing. Ewan McGregor throughout was mostly sort of the straight man, and then George Clooney was the goofball.
I would have ended that scene with the reporters actually reacting to a dude going through the wall, which they don't show.
Is that what you were getting at, Dingus, when you said you had an opinion about where this should end?
Well, I think if you're going to bother to have the film that you have here, and I agree with you, Tom, that you never actually have a feeling that he's participating. He's whining and complaining and being carried along and just sort of observing. But you don't have a feeling that he has an involvement the way we're supposed to expect with that ending. And if you're going to have the movie that as it is now, then I think you have to end it at the 2 moments before that, with him about to charge into the wall and end it there, and we don't know if he's run into it or gone through it.
Ah, the Color of Money ending.
Exactly.
You don't know what happens.
at least give me something like sort of, that's a little weird. Now I can leave with a little something weird, but the movie never finds its tone, so I don't know why I'm bothering.
No. And it doesn't – there's a lot of missing characterization. Like, I didn't understand what Kevin Spacey's deal was. Like, why is he put in charge of this program that he doesn't believe in? Because I thought he was not – I mean, I get the sense he was supposed to be jealous of like Clooney's mastery of the psychic arts. But he gets in charge. I didn't understand why he was on the base with the goats if he thought it was all bullshit. I didn't understand why Bridges was with him still if he's been dishonorably discharged. Do you guys understand that?
It was because the movie needed a villain and it needed the convenient mentor.
He just comes on and snarls like he did in that movie with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. What's that called?
Movie does he snarl with Gene Wilder and Richard
Pryor? One where Gene Wilder's blind and Richard Pryor's deaf. No, wait, switch that. Richard Pryor's deaf. Wait, I just didn't switch it.
And Kevin Spacey is the villain in this movie you're thinking of?
Yes, it's him and Joan Severance.
Holy
Ebony
cats.
And Ivory? Lake? No.
I love this movie, though. I want to see Kevin Spacey and Joan Severance being villain and villainess.
Oh, God, I know what you're talking about. Oh, my God.
I want to call it If You Could See What I Hear, but that's the Mark Singer movie.
No, it's a dumber title than that.
It's something deaf, blind. Hang on.
Someone's Googling. I do agree. Kevin Spacey was wasted. They did nothing with him in this. They squandered. They tried to do something with Jeff Bridges that I don't feel was entirely successful. But it was sort of like they weren't even trying with Kevin Spacey. They just threw him in there and did nothing with him. And you know, the scene where he's stoned out of his gourd on LSD and laughing at the Beatle, that was just – it's sort of like that's what you're going to do.
That's a ripoff of Salvador.
Well, it's also – I mean, I've seen him do that better in, like, American Beauty. You know, in American Beauty, he plays a repressed guy who gets wigged out on drugs and sort of finds his bliss. And, you know, they just sort of played it as a weak joke. You know,
that was the part of the spiritual uplift phase of the movie.
I hated that.
And everyone's having a great trip on LSD, and no one's dying from these tanks running through fences.
Not only that, but we'd already seen the darker side of – fiddling around with LSD and that really weirdly uncomfortable scene where the soldier goes out on the parade field opening fire with the handgun. Considering what had just happened in Fort Hood, I was like, ooh.
Boy, I had the same reaction, Tom, and I think that if this film had more of a chance to actually be controversial, then that would really hurt this film. Is it because when that scene happens, all I could think about was the stories of the past week and how that would just roll up on this film if this film were any good and had any chance at making any business whatsoever.
Well, now they can blame if it bombs, they can go, oh, it's because of the Forthood.
Well, I think it's an awesome movie. I think Dingus, if the film had tried to have any bite or if it had any gravity, then yes, you know, that scene might have hit harder. But because it was such a trifle, it just felt so inoffensive, but just sort of poorly timed to me.
Well, I find it more of an offensive film because of what you just said, having nothing to do with the Fort Hood thing. I actually became more and more angry and offended by it because of that, because it is a trifle based on what I feel like it could have been or the story it could have told and what it chose to tell, which is nothing.
Right. And where I felt, where I had that reaction, Dingus, was once we see detainees, once the movie starts being about detainees, then it was no longer funny to me. It was no longer about wacky.
Laughing.
Right. It was no longer about wacky remote viewer.
But it thinks it's MASH. That's what the movie thinks it's
been. No, it thinks it's TV MASH. The guy who made this.
It thinks it's after MASH.
Good. The guy who made this saw the TV show MASH and put George Clooney in a robe, but he never bothered to watch the film, so he never understood what black comedy is.
Yeah. And now, so one of the most disappointing things to me is, well, all I knew going into this, I knew it was based on a book, but do you guys know who Grant Heslov is, the fellow who wrote and directed this? I think he just adapted it and he directed it. So, Dingus, you know who he is. Do you recognize his name?
Yeah, he's an actor. I mean, he's been in a lot of George Clooney stuff.
Well, he co-wrote with Clooney Good Night and Good Luck. No, Good Luck and Good Evening. And
really? That's an awesome movie.
Good Night and Good Luck. Am I saying it wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. Good Night and Good Luck.
So he co-wrote that with Clooney. Clooney directed it. So I remember seeing his name and thinking, oh, great. You know, here's a guy. Because Good Night and Good Luck had a lot of bite. It was this enormously politically relevant movie about the Bush administration without being about the Bush administration. I mean, it was really an incisive political movie that was very elliptical in terms of what it was talking about and subtle. And it was a beautiful piece of work. And I remember thinking, okay, well, Clooney, you know, he's just a good-looking, talented actor, and he's made smart business decisions. Surely he's not the creative mind. This Grant Heslov fellow must be the genius behind Good Night and Good Luck. So I was really psyched about that going into The Men Who Stare at Goats, seeing, okay, this is the guy who wrote this movie for Clooney, and now he's doing this adaptation. So that was one of the reasons I was so bitterly disappointed, is that it's such a trifle, and then it gets to the situation with the detainees, and I'm, like you said, Kelly, now I feel like a jerk because we've been watching this comedy about that. Actually, I didn't feel like a jerk. I felt like they were jerks. I was like, you know what? If you guys want to bring up detainees and the treatment of detainees and have this absolutely just out of place feel good scene where everybody gets wigged out on LSD and they send them out into the desert past signs saying that the people are going to get shot once they cross this line.
And then two main characters die from flying a helicopter on it.
Exactly.
And I mean, it's referred to, oh, the shaman went to the skies.
I mean, was that supposed to be funny or poignant? Or I have no idea.
It was supposed to be poignant, I think.
And I didn't think it was.
No. They want to have it both ways, like every movie now. They can't make stuff like MASH anymore because it's too edgy, so they try to make something that everyone will enjoy. So they take awesome – they take cool ideas. Like when I first heard the phrase be all that you can be in the 80s, I knew it was crunchy. I knew some hippie had come up with it. I forget what I was talking about. And then they make it Army of One, which is even hippier. All right, anyway, what were you saying? Something relevant and pertinent?
No, I'm with you. This is really boring that we all agree.
Yeah.
All right, let's take this approach. What was the best joke in the movie? I'll go first and give you guys some time to chew over. Ironically enough, I thought that the best joke – now, I'm easily amused. I laugh at all kinds of stupid things. I laughed at this plenty. But ironically enough, my favorite joke, I think I'd heard it before too, was the joke about the Iraqi propaganda, where they drop leaflets on American soldiers saying your wives are at home having sex with Bart Simpson and Burt Reynolds. That was my favorite joke, and I think I'd heard it before, and I don't think I can credit it to this movie. All right, what are y'all's favorite jokes? Dingus, what was the funniest bit for you?
I don't think I got that joke. So there you go.
Well, it's the cultural ignorance. It's PSYOPs being completely culturally ignorant and incompetent.
Okay.
I can't explain that. Now
I get it. Thank you. It's good. A-. 80s and 90s. I get it.
So, Dingus, what would you pick?
All right. I've got a favorite joke, which is actually just a favorite line that made me chuckle, and then the joke that made me want to punch them in the neck over and over again. Which do you want to hear first?
Let's go to the punch in the neck one last. Let's hear the favorite one first.
Every time I heard the word Jedi, I wanted to punch you and McGregor in the neck.
Wait,
when
I said
it the first time.
God, yeah.
They do it the whole movie.
They do it the whole movie. It's not funny. It doesn't make any sense when he's already made a joke about a hobbit in the Shire.
And that's right, and the blonde farm boy on Tatooine. Like, he even references Star Wars.
Exactly. He's like, what's a Jedi? I don't know what a Jedi is. I'm just going to make Jedi jokes for the whole movie. Shut up!
Well, Dingus, did you realize... Hold on, Dingus. Did you realize that Ewan McGregor played a Jedi in the Star Wars prequels?
No, that was Mark Hamill. See? What are you talking about?
See, that's the thing. It's a pop culture reference. Isn't that clever? See, he plays a Jedi, you get it? And he doesn't know what they are. And the audience titters at that. See? Isn't that funny?
No one tittered at it.
My audience did. I had a bunch of morons.
Did they?
Oh yeah, they loved that.
I'm jealous. I had
one guy just who loved, I don't know if he worked on the movie or something, but he was loving it. And he loved those little Jedi nudge nudge wink wink moments.
Every time though?
Every time he was into those.
See, that's the guy who ruins movies. Because he goes to these focus group things and they go, oh, that guy loves the Jedi shit. We gotta put 50 more lines about Jedi.
So, Dingus, what was the joke that worked for you? What was your favorite joke?
Well, just real fast, this was indicative of me of what must have been going on, because this is that whole Ocean's – I don't know what the crappy one was, Ocean's 12, where they're just all sitting around goofing off and making jokes. And that's what I thought. Well, this is what Grant Haslaw fell into. George Clooney and Ewan McGregor and these stars are sitting around, and they just want to make jokes, and he doesn't have any juice to tell them to shut up and get to work. You know, what even makes me angrier at this movie is that it makes me like Mark Wahlberg more than Ewan McGregor, which makes me angry because I apologize. There were a couple of moments during this movie where at the very beginning, after the sort of the cold open, you have the credit sequence with the bombing of Baghdad. And immediately all I could think of was, God, I wish we could be talking about Generation Kill rather than this dopey movie that I'm about to see. Because all I could already tell.
Not in that.
No. But then by the end of the movie, I started thinking of this movie as what it could have said about the second Iraq War and what Three Kings said about the first. And how good I think Mark Wahlberg was in Three Kings and how Ewan McGregor just sort of stumbles through this movie. And I like him so much.
Well, here's Dingus, and I want to get back to favorite jokes, but to comment on this, Dingus, one of, I think, the big problems with the movie is I felt there was no real chemistry between Ewan McGregor and George Clooney. And you mentioning Mark Wahlberg, there was enormous chemistry between them in Three Kings. I mean, George Clooney could be so hit or miss, and it's kind of like, you know, when you're playing tennis, you're with someone who's better than you, you're better. And I didn't feel that they really were working off each other or elevating each other. There just seemed to be no chemistry. It was just like goofing off. And even then, they didn't really seem to. And I like both of them enormously. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I missed Mark Wahlberg, too, now that you mentioned that. Yeah.
That's absolutely right. There's this great moment. It should be a great moment when they're in the car and he does the sparkly eyes thing. That should have been hilarious. And there's nothing there.
I like that part. Am I dumb?
You know, I liked it too, but I agree with Dingus. There was nothing there. I liked it because I'm easily amused. But that would have been so much better if it had been two actors with chemistry with each other. That's one of those little intangibles where, you know what, even if the actors don't, it's funny enough that it can work, but if you get two actors who are really working with each other, it would have been a beautiful thing. And this was not a beautiful thing, it was an amusing thing.
I mean, put Matt Damon in the car with him. I think that would have been hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe and after being a Jedi, Ewan McGregor can't go back to being a dumb guy with the Jedi. Sorry, what?
So Dingus, what joke worked for you? What's your favorite joke?
All right, all right. When... this seems so meaningless now, but so much of this film is, it's when Ewan McGregor says to him, are you saying I'm only capable of ironically attacking you?
Ah, that was, yeah, okay. That's your literary bent.
Yeah, I love the little, you know, the air quotes thing. Why are you using air quotes? You know, that's my favorite part of, I think, Role Models as well.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. Kelly Wand, what would be your favorite joke?
Where the dude raises his middle finger and goes, I'm doing Torah, asshole.
So for our listeners, Kelly has just jumped episodes.
Oh.
What would be your favorite joke in The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Where he kicks over the solar panel. That was kind
of
funny.
That was before I was like fed up with the movie. Yeah, like that. Some of those were like early enough in the movie where
when
I was.
When it's a road movie at the beginning, it's kind of funny.
It really did feel like some sort of half baked, like, who worked with Dean Martin? Jerry Lewis? Who were the guys that would do those road movies? I didn't see any of those, but apparently.
Ben Crosby and
Warren Beatty.
Yeah. I think it was, yeah, Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty. They would do those
Ashton
great road
Kutcher
movies.
And.
And William Sean Scott.
John Williams. Williams.
To me, I'm never. I do have one serious thing to say about this movie that I did really love.
I have one too. Kelly, can you come up with one as well and we can make a
trend?
No, really? All right.
A serious thing?
I had one moment where I really liked the movie. I have a moment that I thought really worked well.
You guys go and I'll try and think of something.
You ride our coattails. Dingus, you go first.
All right. There's this beautiful moment, and it really could have been the turning point of the film.
You know what? I think you're going to steal mine, aren't you?
Is it Mahmood?
You jerk. I'm going to go first. I'm raising my hand. I'm going first. It was Mahmood. It was the moment with Mahmood where they forgive each other for the people from their country. That was my favorite moment. Okay, now you go, Dingus.
I liked all the jokes Robert Patrick made about him being Muhammad. That was my favorite.
So you've stolen my thunder, Dingus. You're such a jerk. Okay, fine. You take it.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Nothing. Go on. I'm not talking anymore.
I was so taken with that actor that he has such a small little part, and he is just this amazing, I don't know how to put it, this infinite sadness about him. And there's a chance here, and when you have that scene where they all apologize to each other, where the two of them apologize to each other, suddenly I had the feeling that, okay, this movie could be. This could be the story, Ewan McGregor's story could be the American story of our story in Iraq. His story of going there is our story of going to Iraq, and this could be where this movie is going, but it just drops it.
Yeah. It's sort of like I got the sense that this was an episode that when the guy was making the documentary, he'd come across this episode and he just realized it was too precious not to include it somehow. And it just sort of survived intact, like maybe one of the parables in the New Testament or something.
So that dude who was in your audience laughed at it.
Even if there's no place for it, it's sort of like, you know, this is a great little moment. We've got to have this. Let's put it in there. And it you know, if the movie had sort of been built around that kind of heart and that sort of authenticity, I would have liked it much more. But yeah, I just thought that was just a precious little gem in the middle of the movie that the movie couldn't live up to. So Kelly, you got a tough act to follow. Do you have a moment that you seriously liked that holds up next to that?
It has to be a serious moment.
Well, not really. Just a moment where you thought, you know, this is really working. I'm really digging this. If it can, because I was willing to sort of forgive a lot at that point. I was like, you know what, this is a great little moment. And like Dingus said, that actor was good. He is,
and then he's dropped.
I was so worried that they were going to make him one of the detainees at the end. I was like, oh God, are you guys really going to do this? And they didn't, fortunately. But
you know, I looked
only because they didn't think of it.
Yeah, if only they just couldn't get him for one more day.
You looked him up, Dingus. Who was he?
He's the only thing I recognized him from. He was in The Visitor. I don't know who he was though.
What's The Visitor? What is that? Oh, the Tom Hanks thing at the airport.
No, Richard
Jenkins. Oh, good Lord!
I like where your mind's at, though.
Yeah, that's great.
Who was
The Terminal Visitor.
Okay, right. The Richard Jenkins, the Tom McCarthy movie.
He plays a guy named Omar, and I can't for the life of me think of who that is in the movie.
Maybe one of the drummers or something?
Maybe. I don't know. But I had to look him up because he made such an impression on me. And he's only got a couple of seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
But he's just got this incredible sadness about him that just so well, symbolizes what happened to that country or what that country has become because of us.
You know what it kind of reminds me of, Dingus? And you and I have talked about this before. There's an actor named Irfan Khan who briefly shows up in Darjeeling Limited as a bereaved father.
Yeah.
And it's just this sort of wacky movie, and then it hits this moment of just real pain and heart, and they have a tremendous actor to carry it. And in Darjeeling Limited, it changes the tone of the movie. It's sort of like the movie is going along, then it hits this moment, it's anchored by this incredible actor in a small role, and then it goes in a different direction. So when that kind of happened in The Men Who Stare at Goats, I was... You know, I sort of thought of that, of Darjeeling Limited and Irfan Khan's in that. I really like that guy.
Yeah, and then you get to that moment later on where they look in the first detainee, and he says, "What is it?" And I think the answer is the dark side. And you just feel like you have no business. You have not earned this moment at all. Because you just betrayed this other moment earlier in the film and just decided to be silly with things like the silence of the goats and all that crap.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Wow.
You just, that got a laugh, too. I was really annoyed.
My guy loved it. My guy in the audience, he dug that.
Really?
He got it. He understood that reference. Yeah. I wished the movie had been about Robert Patrick and his security detail. That right there, like you were saying, Kelly, or I think it was, yeah, Kelly, you were saying he was sort of wasted in this small part. I just wanted to see more of Robert Patrick and these goofballs pulling up to get gas. I did dig that.
See, he should have been paired with Clooney.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Incoming call.
I thought that I was on Skype. How embarrassing.
Go ahead and get it. Tell him.
What?
Who is it? Who is it? Let him talk to us.
It's probably some... No, I'll talk to her. She knows I'm doing a podcast.
Kelly's got
this
a booty
just her
call.
Way to sabotage me. Yeah, it's a podcast groupie.
We could take questions. Hello, you're on.
It's Art Bell. What is it? I mean, how do you label this? Because I think I've heard sort of it was going to be a farce, but it doesn't. It's more glib than farce.
They marketed it as a farce, and well, it's got some. Good ideas in it that it shouldn't have been. I think
it's a black comedy. I mean, I think that's sort of what they think they've got here.
Well, they've got a charcoal or gray comedy. They don't. I don't know. They don't know what the difference between glib and farce is. It just never gets there. And I like what you're talking about, Tom. This idea of it just being that wacky sort of statement about what we're doing over there with Robert Patrick, but. Just never gets there. It's just aware of itself being cute, and it keeps being cute.
Yeah.
And so I can't look at it as a trifle without getting annoyed with it, because I just keep thinking of the other films I want to see instead.
So they have here, go ahead, Dingus.
Go ahead. No, they just have good people working on it. They have a good guy shooting it. I mean, the music is utter crap, but
this script attracted a ton of talent.
It really did. It's a great cast. Yeah.
They probably thought what you did, though. They went, oh, it's the dude from Good Night, Good Luck and Clooney, so how can this be bad?
Right.
Well, a lot of them, I mean, like I said, the cinematographer is a guy who...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Dingus.
Well, he's worked with Clooney on all of those films and also with Paul Thomas Anderson. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Robert Elswit, is that what's...
Exactly, yeah.
Give a shout-out to Robert. Hi, Robert, if you're listening.
Nice job, Robert.
I like your work.
No one's listening to this.
Robert Elswit might be listening.
He skips to the 3x3.
Nice.
So what movie would you guys recommend to people instead of The Men Who Stare at Goats?
A Serious Man and Paranormal Activity.
well, in terms of addressing...
And Where the Wild Things Are.
In terms of addressing what this movie was trying to do. And I ask because
MASH.
Okay, MASH is a good one.
Just watch MASH repeatedly. You might like
I like that, Kelly. Yeah. The Altman movie, not the TV series.
You should watch the documentary on which this is based. And there's something, the whole idea of human beings being able to do impossible things, it Do you guys know who the meditating boy is? Have you ever Googled that guy?
No, but I like
this
where you're going.
All right. There's this kid. All right. I know I sound like a total chimp right now, but bear with me.
Okay.
There's this kid named Ram Bahadur Bamjan. And, he's supposed to be the new Buddha.
I want to hear that again. I just you did that so well.
Bahadur Bamjan.
Can you sing it?
You can't help but say it without singing it. I mean, that was
their whole language is musical. Racist. I meant melodic, which isn't racist. But anyway, my point is, this kid, he's like 12. See how fact-checked everything is on a podcast? He meditated without food or water for 10 months in Nepal. And George Saunders, your favorite author, Tom.
Yes,
and my favorite
too.
He went and did an article on this kid. And he just sat in a tent in the middle of – just for one night. And it was so cold, he said, you know what? The food and water thing isn't even the issue. It's the fact that he's just sitting out there in these elements for any length of time that's stupefying. And this, and so I think of that kid. I think of Yogi Kudu. And I think – you know I'm talking about there?
I do not, but tell us.
Yogi Kudu? He's the
it means no
8-foot tall black guy from That's Incredible that crawled into a tiny cube and sat cube for the whole episode.
Wow.
See, now that's something the Army should be teaching new recruits.
It would certainly cut down on shipping.
I guess you're so irreverent. Kelly, I just got to say, Kelly, I love what you're doing.
Me too.
That is some awesome stuff. Thank you.
Ram Bahadur Bamjan.
Very nice.
Come up. Just Google meditating boy and read about him. And then don't see this movie.
Dingus okay, Tom. You're next. You get a chance to steal my thunder now.
So it won't be stealing your thunder because I know what you're going to pick and you haven't seen the one. Actually, I tried to show it to you and like a dingus, you fell asleep and we're trying to watch it. So I'm waiting for, actually, until earlier this year, I was waiting for our Dr. Strangelove, you know, the movie that says, that sort of encapsulates the madness of the invasion of Iraq for our generation. And it's a fellow named Armando Iannucci. I'm not even going to try his name. He did a British series called The Thick of It, and a movie came out this year called In the Loop, which is this sort of, it's in the style of The Office. It's a sort of it's a comedy about the Iraq war, but it's not about the war. It's about the infrastructure that led up to the war. And it, I think, is the Dr. Strangelove about the Iraq war. It's an incredible movie, and at first it just seems like a goof. I've watched this thing like 4 times. It is so dense. It is just so packed with character, and I think ultimately where it goes and what it does to its characters is such a powerful commentary on the war that I would say, you know what, don't mess with The Men Who Stare at Goats. Track down a copy of this. I think it'll be on DVD in a month or so. This is sort of the definitive black comedy about the Iraq war. So I know that didn't steal your thunder, Dingus, because you haven't seen it yet. So.
And you went to see this where?
It had a very limited theatrical release, unfortunately. Like it's a British film. It has a couple of American actors in it, but not many people saw it. So instead of seeing Men Who Stare at Goats, look for this thing.
All right. Yeah, I would say of what I saw, it's brilliant. But yes, indeed, I don't know. I might have gotten up to coach soccer that morning, so it's possible I fell asleep.
Wait, you saw part of it?
Yes, I did see part of it. Okay. I had a special exclusive screening.
That you slept through.
Sounds like you were riveted. That's a great sell there after what Tom said.
I can't be
trusted. Fell asleep and then went to soccer practice. Don't miss it.
No, I got up in the morning to coach soccer and then wound up watching it late at night and fell asleep.
I see.
All right, so Dingus, what would you pick instead of The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Well, you know, I'm really pleased that you brought up Dr. Strangelove because in sort of thinking about this over the last day or so, I hadn't thought of that film at all, and that's a brilliant parallel. I mean, parallel in the way that that's a good movie and this one's crap. but I thought I was thinking about Three Kings.
See, I knew you were going to pick that. I wrote that right here. I was like, Dingus is going to pick Three King. I called it.
How could you ever have known that? But, in you know, I watched Three Kings again, and it's not as goofy as I remember it. It's much darker and more difficult, which I liked than I remember. It's not, you know, it's not a farce. It's not, there's a couple goofy moments here and there, but they earn everything they go for. And it's a very well-balanced film.
I knew you were going to pick that. I could have done yours for you.
You're so prescient.
Thank you. Oh, wait.
Three Kings was one where Clooney got mad at, or no. Yeah, he got mad at David Russell.
Oh, everyone gets mad at David O. Russell. I mean, yeah, David O. Russell is...
He's a nightmare.
Yeah, but he makes great movies. I mean, if you're going to be a nightmare, at least be as talented as David O. Russell.
That's true. And I actually think when some people have meltdowns, I'm on the side of the meltdowner a lot.
Big Christian Bale fan, are you?
Yeah. That guy, I read in The Loop, not in The Loop, the movie, but the actual Loop, that light guy he was yelling at is a total fuck-up.
Shane Hurlbutt. I actually knew his name when I went to see the Terminator movie, and they're flashing through the credits. I'm like, why do I know the cinematographer's name? Why does that look familiar? And I just realized I'd heard it and then read about it in the Christian Bale meltdown.
And when Alec Baldwin called his kid a stupid little pig or something, cruel
and
little pig.
If you're gonna do that, be as talented as Alec Baldwin. That's the only prerequisite. If you're talented, you've earned a meltdown or two. That's fine.
He's just being in character.
Sure. It's like Woody Harrelson punching a paparazzi because he just came off Zombieland and claimed that he was paranoid.
Thought he was a zombie. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Russell Crowe, hey, you can throw a phone at a doorway.
I don't think that Russell Crowe is talented enough to have a meltdown.
He won an Oscar.
So
that's the ultimate proof of talent.
Kelly Wand, they hand out Oscars like valet tickets in Los Angeles. I don't know if you know that. I've got an Oscar for my appearance on The Office. Did you know that? I keep it.
Oh, yeah, the one where you make Pam cry.
Yeah, I got an Oscar for that. I don't know if you knew that.
I did. I have it.
So a quick observation. I appreciate it when you show when in a movie a character gets injured and you mess up his eye. So for a while, Clooney had the bloodshot eye contact lens thing going. You rarely do that. Normally you give him a black eye. But
they stole that from Alien Cubed.
Well, that's the one I wanted to mention. Like, they do that to Sigourney Weaver's eye throughout much of Alien 4. You know, she's in
the same contact lens.
And a movie called From London to Brighton, where the actress has been beaten up and has a swollen, bloodshot eye for most of it. I think it's very courageous to sort of obscure an actor's eyes like that. Well, not courageous. I mean, Clooney's good looking enough. They could give him, you know,
yeah, it made him look
on
better.
His face and he would be fine. I mean, yeah. So I appreciated that they did that.
Well, you know, somebody in Three Kings has a patch on his eye after getting injured.
That's an easy one to fake, though. You don't have to put something in your eye for a
patch. Yeah, exactly. Patches look cool. I think of James LeGros in Living in Oblivion. You know, patches are cool. Every actor wants to wear an eye patch.
Well, first he's got his
eye
covered.
He's crying underneath it.
He's got his eye covered in blood, though, after his Humvee runs over a mine. Do you know what actor I'm talking about?
Spike Jones?
Absolutely.
Do I win anything?
You win an eye patch.
Sweet! I'm going to wear it for the next podcast.
Yes, oh, there's going to be more of these?
All right, I have one. Can I ask you guys one question about the movie?
Please do, yes.
I have a bunch of questions, but they're all dumb.
Well, this is dumb too, but I was trying to sort of suss out ways that this movie could have been better.
Mm-hmm.
And I had read something about Altman when he was doing MASH, never mentioning the Korean War at all during the film.
Ah,
and basically sort of using
timeless.
It. Well, not timeless as a specific thing about Vietnam, but never mentioning the Korean War, so people would just think about Vietnam. And I think studio people put in some sort of text at the beginning. Or something at the beginning, I haven't seen in a long time, to specify that this was the Korean War. And my question about the GOAT movie is that one of the things I don't think that works, I don't know if it doesn't work because it's in the context of this real war and it handles it so ham-handedly. And I wonder if either it had been before it or if it had been – for a fictitious war, and if that could have helped. Do you guys have any opinions about this, either you or either Tom or Kelly?
I actually think I like where you're going, Dingus. Because the stuff about the Iraq war is almost an afterthought. This is primarily a movie about how goofy these remote viewing type people are, and how silly the military can be in terms of, like, it's sort of the inefficiency of the Pentagon. And it's almost like a Catch-22 style comedy about, look how wacky the military is and how they're not effective. But
Clooney, I thought, was a genuine psychic, which sort of undermines that point for them. Although he does get on a helicopter that's doomed to crash, so maybe he's not that psychic.
I mean, I just don't think you need to have the Iraq war in it. Like, I don't think it needs to try to...
I think it was based on the article, I guess the reporter's real. And he did some. He met the Clooney character.
But I think what Dingus is asking is, well, Dingus, like, if I'm not, like, what you're saying, Dingus, is, does it need to be about this war, or could it? I think it could have lost what it's trying to do about the Iraq War and been a more effective movie if it was just about wacky government initiatives to study psychics.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I'm asking. If it had been about a war, like, you know, Wag the Dog kind of made up a war. Or a conflict that, you know, we're going to bomb, I don't know what it was, Algeria or something. And it was supposed to be, a corollary, I guess, for us bombing Osama bin Laden or us bombing sites in Iraq,
right.
Or rather Clinton doing those things, but it chose something fictitious and was sillier that way. And I wonder if this would have worked better and wouldn't have been so distracting if it hadn't been rumbling through Baghdad and instead been rumbling through Fredonia or something.
Well, I was certainly a lot less amused. Like I said, the moment that you see the guys in the orange jumpsuits, I'm like, you know what, we're not laughing now. This isn't funny. You know, this isn't something that I really feel like thinking of. Like, I don't want to see wacky guys trying to blow up goats when you're going to bring detainees being tortured into the equation.
Well, it undermines the whole title of the film as well, because I think the goats are supposed to be people. I mean, the goats and how we're treating the goats is basically how we treat humans, and him letting the goats go is supposed to be this poignant moment.
Right,
but you're
right.
Over on the other side of the camp, we're just ushering these guys in orange suits out. It's as if, I think Kelly said earlier, they want to have it both ways. We want to have this Hallmark moment in addition to this wacky moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's letting them go to die in the desert, by the way.
Right, right.
So it's not that humane, is it? And that detainee. Also, they tricked me, because usually when there's no women or no love story in a movie, it's normally the sign of a great film, like Bridge Over the River Kwai or The Thing or The Descent.
That's good.
Wait a minute.
Wait. But yeah, you know what I'm saying?
What were you going to call him on there, Dingus? I think Kelly had a great point. A movie, it takes a lot for a movie to not fall back on a love interest.
Yeah, and it's such a studio-made prefab product in so many other ways. It's striking that Ewan McGregor
He said a movie with no women, and then he talked about The Descent.
Well, he meant, like, no love interest, although that did figure into the end of Descent. But I get where you're going, Kelly. I'm with you, even if Dingus doesn't understand it.
He's counting the monsters in The Descent as men. Outrageous science.
All right. So that was Men Who Stare at Goats.
Do you have anything to say about the box for our listeners?
Since no, don't see it. We don't want to. Yeah, we're not like this general interest. Hey, what'd you see this week podcast?
No, just tell me what the box is. Just because
it's a horrible movie. That's what the box is.
The
box
is it like The Jacket.
It's worse. It's worse.
Is it similar? Is there a time
It's clumsy.
Travel?
It's awkward. It's like Richard Kelly by way of an M. Night Shyamalan thing. It's vaguely creepy nonsense. So there you go.
But you like that stuff.
Not when it's that.
You're a Shyamalan apologist.
Oh, good Lord, I am. You know what? I do kind of come across that sometimes. But The Box, no one could be an apologist for The Box. The Box is horrible. Do not go see it.
What's in The Box?
It's in the box. Is there a big question?
Well, so do you guys know what the box is? A movie about a Richard Matheson short story, which seems like just some sort of moral fable. If someone gave you a button and said, I will give you $1 million if you press this button.
Oh, yeah.
But know that the moment you press this button, someone who you don't know will die. And so most people would sort of maybe struggle a little bit, and they'd ultimately press the button and take $1 million. Well, what if the button then was handed over to someone else, and you were the person who was going to die if the button was pressed? So that's the whole point.
Just sell the box for $500,000.
The guy's going to come back and pick up the box. You know, you only get 24 hours to decide whether or not you're going to press the button on the box.
Sounds pretty convoluted.
But it gets worse, because this movie is about an alien invasion.
Weak.
Yeah, it's an alien.
They wouldn't care about boxes.
No, but they're testing us. They're testing us for, and this line is used in the movie, they're testing us for the altruism coefficient.
Oh, good Lord.
Really? So it's the Day of the Earth Stood Still remake again.
You know, the way to go see that kind of movie, and I almost hate to say it, but go see The Forgotten instead.
Hey, I like that movie.
I do too. I know. I do too.
Is that the one with Julianne Moore?
Spoiler. Yeah.
You like that movie? No, it's what's wrong with you people?
Have you seen
2001 that you like?
Have you seen The Forgotten, Kelly?
Is that the one with Julianne Moore and the kids are all destroyed?
Yes, yes. Have you seen it?
I like that one shot where the cloud becomes the ship, and it's kind of They Live-esque, kind of epic. But they don't beat the aliens, and there's the happy ending feeling.
I'm just saying, don't go see The Box. See The Forgotten if you haven't seen
it. That's pretty low. That's a low bar.
1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees, and I'm caught in between, counting 1, 2, 3, Peter Pan, Mary Free, getting down with 3 feet, everybody loves ocean.
Oh, well, listen to that. I guess that means it's time for this week's 3x3.
It could mean anything, really. Based on other events.
Dingus, you chose this week's topic. Why don't you introduce it for us?
I think I'm going to use that as a ringtone from now on. All right, this is 3x3, our weekly feature, wherein we choose three films that fulfill a certain conceptual idea. This week's 3x3 is called The Company You Keep, and it is films that have been ruined or made for you based on who you saw them with. And who's going first? Would that be Kelly or Tom?
I'll start because I'm introducing later on this week's topic.
Ah, okay.
So my number three pick, and by the way, I gave you grief about this earlier, Dingus, because I feel this is more, this is less about this is less about the movie and more about us as movie viewers, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. So having said that, my number three pick is a movie called Torque. Torque, why are you laughing? Why are you laughing at Torque? Torque is this movie about like these guys on motorcycles, and I don't remember a lot of specifics, but they like have chases, and there's a chase where Ice Cube, I think, is riding a motorcycle across the top of a train. It's a bad movie. It's a terrible movie. But I was a big brother for 5 years to a kid from, I guess he went from like 9 to 14. And we saw Torque when he was 11. And I loved it because he loved it. And it sort of taught, like, I don't know, Dingus, you've got a son and you'll be enjoying this soon enough. But you'll be able, and actually you have enjoyed it, I think. Maybe I'm spoiling one of your picks. But being able to see a movie with a child and being able to enjoy it because the child enjoyed it is really a precious thing. So Torque, I adored that movie. I had a great time. And it was all because my little brother Damon was with me. So, Kelly, what's your number three pick?
That's a very sweet story. And now I will ruin that awesome sweetness with Hook, which was saved for me in that I couldn't believe the guy, the friend of mine who saw Hook before me, was describing every scene in it. I couldn't believe any of it was true. So when I saw it and saw it was true, it actually made me like the movie. Because he was telling me, yeah, it ends. There's Steph Crocodile kills Dustin Hoffman by falling on top of him. No way. Come on, that can't happen. No, burps. And Robin Williams says this duel with a cell phone and the Lost Boys skateboard. I just couldn't believe it was real. And it was. And it was the worst movie ever. But somehow, I don't know. It was like a dream. I can't put it any other way because I'm not skilled.
That makes me want to see Hook.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not. I have not seen Hook. Yeah.
Wow.
So, all right. Good one. Dingus, what's your number three?
My number three is a movie called Bottle Rocket. It might actually be Bottle Rockets, but I'm not sure.
That's Wes Anderson.
Yeah, Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
This movie I couldn't stand for many years. It was ruined for me the first time I saw it. And this is, of course, my first exposure to Mr. Anderson's work. We were having a couples movie night thing. This was back before I was married, and I was just dating the woman who became my wife. And we were doing one of those weird, uncomfortable couples auditioning each other to see if we're going to wind up being friends nights. And it was two people we were working with, and we went over to their house for dinner, and I was tasked with bringing the movie, with choosing and bringing the movie. And
That's the dude's duty. Right.
Yeah, that's the dude's duty. And I'd heard some things about Bottle Rocket, but again, I don't really pay attention to anything of what movies are about, and I don't watch trailers, so I just figured, well, a lot of people I know like this, so I'll get this, and I brought it, and they just did not get it at all. And they were just it was just a total fail. They just were making fun of it, and of course I was so self-conscious about it that I couldn't laugh at it, and they hated it, and for years I held a grudge against it and Wes Anderson, thinking that it was crap because I just hadn't been able to really watch it, and luckily Rushmore came along and I was able to change that.
And I actually knew this probably inspired your choice of topic, didn't it?
This was one thing that did.
Okay.
I can see that. I can see people ruining Bottle Rocket because it kind of wears its heart on its sleeve. And so the ironical types, which you're sort of feeling like when you're on dates, sometimes you're above it. You're above feeling real emotions about movies.
Well, and the cool thing about Bottle Rocket is it was before there was a such thing as a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
All right, Tom, your number two, please.
This is similar to your experience there, Dingus. I was dating a girl. So you know what it's like when you want to show people a movie that you love, that means a lot to you personally. and I was dating a girl.
Spanglish.
Things were going great. We ended up dating for a while. Oh, God.
Is this Spanglish?
No, Spanglish is a similar story. So Spanglish, well, this Spanglish is the inverse of what I'm about to describe. Spanglish, I was dating a girl who loved this movie. She told me this, I love this movie, you should see it. And then I saw it and I hated it. Luckily I didn't watch it with her, so I didn't have to put on that brave face about, yeah, that was good. So instead, it's Magnolia, you know, P.T. Anderson, and it's got Magnolia. I can sit down and watch the first 45 minutes of Magnolia over and over again. That never gets old to me. I mean, just the pacing of that, it's just a whirlwind of emotion and character development and virtuoso camera work and just snappy dialogue. And then it sort of bogs down for a bit, and you kind of have to earn the ending it goes to. And then it has that cloud burst at the end with the frogs raining out of the sky. And Magnolia is such a moving experience for me. So I'm showing it to this girl that I've started dating, and she's a smart girl, and we, you know, she's into books and stuff. I mean, she's no Philistine. And we're watching Magnolia, and I'm going through all this stuff, and she seems to be into it, and it's awesome. And then we get to the end, and there's the cloud burst, and the frogs raining. And she leans over, and she says to me, and she hasn't said anything during the movie, and she says to me, "Have you ever had frog legs?" And I was like, what?
Wait, that chick's a keeper.
But
that's a good line.
The thing is, but it's not like she was so out of what the movie was doing that that's what occurs to her at that moment is, I wonder if he's ever eaten frog legs.
And it's 3 hours up till that point of dead
silence. Yeah, and so that was where I realized, oh, Coco doesn't like Magnolia. Okay. And that was a sort of a point of contention, mostly good-natured. Between us throughout.
Well, that ruined the relationship. It didn't ruin the movie.
Actually, the relationship fell apart for external reasons. But the Magnolia thing was always a subject of good natured ribbing. She knew I loved the movie. I knew she didn't. But that moment, I was just so crestfallen to realize, oh, she's not into it at all. She's wondering if I if I like frog flight.
That's such a funny line. I think you should have slept with her and then thrown her out of a moving car. Spoiler alert.
All right, what's your number two, Kelly Wand?
Well, my number two is also a Ruined by Girl movie, which was Casablanca.
Because
I took her to see Casablanca on a rollicking evening, and she...
Wait, the same girl?
Is who? Tom's? It was the same night, ironically. And we had frog legs, so just, more things make sense, actually, now. At Tom's spiel. But she kept going, how many times are you going to see Casablanca in this movie? Humphrey Bogart sucks. He's the worst actor ever. This is so weak. Ugh. Yeah, she'd go off with him. So, yeah, it's girl. First off, I think every movie is ruined or saved by who you see it with. That's a
very astute thing, Kelly Wand. That might be the smartest thing that you've ever said in all the time that I've known you. And not to say you haven't said other smart things, but I particularly like that one. Well,
so now I'm good for another 10 years. but yeah, Casablanca, I can't enjoy now because I always think of that night. And I go, God, they do say Casablanca every line in this movie. What's wrong with them? This is the masterpiece?
You didn't take her to, I hope you didn't take her to Hamlet.
Nah, she ruined other movies. But have you ever gone to a movie and you or the other person goes, all right, don't ruin this for me. And then it sucks. And then you're like, we saw Planet of the Apes, and I was told, don't ruin this for me by this dude I saw it with. And then it sucked really hard. And we come out Planet of the Apes, and I didn't say anything.
So I've gone, there are times, Dingus, you and I have gone to Sundance, and the only saving grace of a terrible movie we're sitting through is I know that you're just as disgusted with it as I am. And there's something that we saw where we started like just giggling almost uncontrollably at the end of it because it was so terrible. I forgot what that was.
That would be The Reader.
Oh my God! Oh, that wasn't even Sundance, was it?
Because I flipped off the screen at the end.
I should have picked that. Hold on, I got to change my number one pick.
Wait, The Reader, you flipped off the screen? Oh, okay, flipped off. I thought you meant turned off.
I flipped the bird at the director.
Right.
The redeeming feature of The Reader for me was how much Dingus and I hated it and were able to sort of commit to
that. No one likes The Reader.
That's not true. It won an Academy Award, just like I did.
Yeah, but I think they won the award so that the people who voted wouldn't have to watch it. They just go, let's just give them the award and they'll think we saw it. That's the one that Kate Winslet went for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She won her, well, but she'd been up five times.
Did you see it, Kelly Winslet?
No. Nah, yeah. I like Winslet, too.
Well, you should do your term of service.
But no one said, oh, you got to see The Reader, and I zoned out for 3 years.
No, you
or
should
wait,
see it. 1 year.
3 or 1, whatever. Hello?
All right, where are we? Whose turn is it?
All right, I'm up to my number two, I think.
All right, Dingus, what's your number two movie, made or ruined by the company you keep?
All right, my number two movie, this was also ruined for me. It was a movie called Bad Santa.
How could that be ruined? That's an awesome movie, yeah.
Well, once again, it was a couple's night, and this time the couple we went with was my in-laws. And once again, I was tasked.
How did you pick that movie for in-law night? That seems like a bad choice.
Well, we were going out to the movies, and again, I have a problem with spoilers in that I don't watch any trailers. I just sort of glance at who's in it, and I thought, well, gee, it's a comedy. Who doesn't love Billy Bob Thornton? And I don't watch trailers, so I just thought, and my wife's parents are fairly, they have pretty good taste in movies, they're fairly progressive, so I thought, well, let's go see this, it's supposed to be a funny movie. And we got there late, so we couldn't all sit together. It wasn't one of these theaters where you have reserved seats, so we couldn't get four seats together. So the two, my wife and I, sat up in the back, and my in-laws sat a few rows down and over, so I could see them perfectly.
So everyone's already cranky.
Everyone's a little cranky already, and plus, based on the stadium seating, I could see every reaction that they had to the film.
And wince.
And they... It was not even wincing. It was disgust.
And, oh, you know what? They're squares, man. That movie's awesome.
They're not. they, you know, they, these are people who loved In Bruges, for instance. And last year they suggested, two people did, Tom and my mother-in-law suggested In Bruges. And In Bruges is pretty, it's got some vulgar language and it's pretty violent. So they're not squares, but Bad Santa is not for the faint of heart. If you're not prepared for what you're going to see, and so I was pretty dejected by it until I actually watched it on my own sometime later and realized it's a fairly brilliant film.
Yeah, right. Interesting. See, I would have enjoyed their wincing. It would have saved the movie for me.
This may be why you're not married.
It's worth it. I get to see Bad Santa with impunity. We need to Weiss when I got that.
My number one pick, a movie that was made or ruined by the company you keep, we're going to get a little serious here. I have no levity for this. This is not going to be very entertaining. In a way, the movie wasn't entertaining, but I got a lot of value out of seeing it with a crowd of people who are all obviously as affected by it as I was, and part of what made the movie special was sharing that with them, and that was United 93.
That's a great movie.
It's a great movie, and
that I never want to see ever again.
It's a tough thing to watch, but watching it in an auditorium full of people, there was just this very communal sense of sort of reliving that trauma.
Did anyone stand up and go, too soon?
Well, it was a screening here in L.A. And, as people who were all into film and who all knew what they were in for. I mean, I can't imagine anyone stumbling into United 93 like Dingus's in-laws going to Bad Santa. You know, you're not going to just waltz into that and not know what you're in for. But there was a lot of value out of experiencing that in a room full of people. And that movie was very special to me. That was my favorite thing that came out that year. And part of it was because there was this sort of communal aspect to experiencing it in a room full of people. So that's my number one pick.
That's a great choice, Tom. That was my favorite film that year as well for some of the same reason. And I've actually watched it again since then, and it's I don't want to say it holds up. Obviously, it holds up. It's an excellent film, and I think it bears repeat viewings. And I understand why you would say you can't watch it again.
Well, it's a very different kind of experience. It's just as powerful, but sort of more personal. I mean, it's either as personal or communal as the people you're watching it.
It's just too sad. It's technically a brilliant movie, and it's just well made across the board. It's shot perfectly. It's acted perfectly. It's not exploitative at all. It's just like. I don't know.
Well, in a weird way, Kelly, I appreciate, I mean, it's been a long time since 9/11, and over time, the emotional impact of that fades. I mean, the importance of it doesn't, and you can see how it's changed the world. But there is some value. I mean, part of why I see movies is what it does to my emotions.
I know.
I really enjoy it. And so I think United 93 bears watching again when you are ready to sort of do that.
It's the rich man's World Trade Center.
Can you edit that out? Those films should not be mentioned in the same room.
Well, I agree with you. That's my point.
I'd rather you mentioned Wolverine.
Ooh, I didn't see it.
Neither did I, but
Are we allowed to have ties on our lists?
You mean like overlapping choices?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you can't change your choice in response to something someone else has done. But if you picked something that someone had also picked, that's allowed. But no changing.
He wants two choices for his last one.
Oh, ties like that. Oh, no, you can't, Kelly. It's 3x3, not...
Dingus, that was uncool, because I had him.
but just like you brought up Planet of the Apes again this time, you did it last time as well. You said, the one I wanted to choose was Planet of the Apes. I know what you're up to.
No, we're on to you, Kelly Wand.
So I'm a Planet of the Apes apologist. I really hate that movie.
So, Kelly Wand, what is your one number one pick, your single number one pick?
Well, since I can't say Syriana because the TV was broken and it actually felt like a real desert in the screening, which really was the movie, I thought. And it's a much better George Clooney desert movie than the one we talked about this week. I will go with Mr. Sardonicus,
What is that?
Ooh, you didn't see it? I knew.
Tom, I don't even know what that is.
Fan. Oh, you're terrible.
Sardonicus?
You didn't see Peeping Tom till this year.
Peeping Tom is great. Yeah, but wait, Mr. Sardonicus, that's not a real movie. You're inventing something.
This is your student film.
Oh, man, you guys are horrible, horrible film critics. How dare you? How dare you not have seen this movie?
What is it?
It's a 1961 William Castle.
Oh, William Castle. Good Lord. Kelly Wand.
It's a good one. What?
Go ahead. I cut you off.
Well, this was why it was saved for me. It was because I saw it with a girl who could do impressions of his teeth. He's like this disfigured doctor who has he has these really evil teeth, and they're covered with a mask for most of the movie. So he's like Phantom of the Opera, but it's denture themed. And she could do the teeth, and it was the hottest thing ever, even though it was... I mean, she had nice teeth, but she could make... Never mind.
All right, so
that's
my
number one, Mr. Sardonicus.
All right. Great movie. If you will introduce us to this woman, I will see it.
Yeah. You want to be there. But a lot of movies are saved or ruined by the audience that you see it with. Like Zombieland, when I saw that movie, it was killing. They were laughing at everything, from the first scene to the last scene. It was making scenes work that I thought were kind of mediocre, but it was so infectious. Like people were just... And also, Undercover Brother... I saw that movie with a largely black audience, and they were super into it, and it made me totally embrace it. And there's this part where he gets his hair shot off, and all the people in the audience went, "Oh shit!"
Well, but you grant there, Kelly, that it's less than about the movie than the audience. The audience can also make like a concert or a play or a stage reading or whatever.
Well, that's what makes movies a great art form, is there's this democratic quality to seeing it with other people that you don't know, and they're all reacting viscerally to this thing. And they're all obviously movie buffs to the extent that they'll see anything. I mean, usually kids ruin movies, despite Torque notwithstanding. What was with that thing that the kid said behind Dingus during
Journal? Which... Well, one of them was that's
her foot. Yeah, that's her foot.
Oh yeah.
That would have made the movie for me if I didn't already like it.
Well, seeing Paranormal Activity in a crowded theater, it really was a great experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really an evangelist for people going to the movies.
So Dingus, I'm guessing your number one pick has something to do with your son. Am I wrong?
You are wrong. Although that did make the short list, and if I were Kelly Wan, I would bring up one.
I don't like rules.
I would totally bring up WALL-E or even Star Wars, but I'm not going to do that because I'm not Kelly Wan.
So what are you going to do?
OLLE is the number one. My number one film for this category is a little movie called Memento. Hmm. Have you guys heard of this movie?
You mentioned this last week. You're doing a Kelly Wan. You mention Memento every week. Epic fail.
Memento is my movie, and so I have to ask you, Tom, when did you first see Memento? Was it at Sundance?
It was at Sundance. I knew nothing about it. I didn't know who was in it. I didn't know, I mean, at that point nobody knew who Christopher Nolan was. I went in with a completely blank slate.
Yes. And so that is exactly how I saw it, except not at Sundance. I got to see it here in California, and I got to see it as a completely blank slate. I didn't have any idea what the movie was about, and I got to see it in a crowded theater, I think opening weekend. And the reason I got to see it in this way was thanks to Tom, who had seen it at Sundance and loved it and made sure that a whole group of us all went to see it opening weekend before it could be spoiled. And I am so anal about movies being spoiled, again, that I will not watch any trailers, and I don't read synopses or reviews before going to see a film. And Tom largely feels the same way, and had such a great experience seeing that film at Sundance in the way he just described, that he wanted to gift as many of his friends as possible with that same experience. And I have no doubt that I would have loved Memento regardless of how I had seen it, if I had rented it a few years later. But because I got to see it in the theater, not knowing a thing about it, I mean, just imagine the movie starts. Those of you who have seen Memento and don't know and did know something about it, imagine the movie starts, the first shots happen, and you don't know. You have no idea what's going on at all. It's such a great experience to sit in a crowded theater and have those opening shots happen and just be sitting there with a whole group of people going, what? What's going on? Every time I think about that, I get chills. And so thanks to Tom having this sort of like respect for film and for not having film spoiled, I got to see that. And so this was definitely enhanced by that group of people. And then also, of course, getting to go afterward and talk about it. So
see, you were lucky because a lot of audiences get irritated by Perplexity. And I guess it's a movie by movie thing, like everything.
Yeah. But right.
I think if you'd seen it with another audience, they would have hated it. And I say it with love for Memento.
Right. Well, but it was a matter of getting to see it with people who were able to sort of experience it with that same, knowing nothing about it. Like me being able to say, hey, don't read anything about this. Just trust me. We'll go see it when it comes out. And just getting to sort of experience that same coming in with a blank slate, knowing nothing about it. Because that's how I think any narrative is meant to be experienced. Is the director or the writer or the playwright, they should be in control of when you know what you know. You know, you need to trust them and not the people trying to sell it and trying to make money off of it. Those guys are at odds with each other.
Have either of you ever broken up with anyone over a movie? Because she or he liked it or didn't like it, and to you it was the most cherished.
No, but I could tell things were in trouble based on certain differences about movies. I would never have broken up with somebody over that because, you know.
Or divorced.
Oh, well, if you bring divorce into it, well, yeah.
Well, the night's young. Let's see.
If my son turns out to think Star Wars is stupid, we could have a problem.
You might
Star
have
Wars so... is stupid. Way stupid. I totally broke up with Star Wars. Did you see Clone Wars? Ugh.
That's not Star Wars.
The problem, Dingus, will be if your son doesn't appreciate Empire Strikes Back.
Ah, good point.
So that's the warnings. That's the real warning sign there.
Tom wiggles his way out of being a Star Wars apologist. Playing the Empire card.
So that was a good 3x3. Are we ready for next week's?
I'm scared.
Yes,
Tom's scared.
Next week's 3x3, it's R-rated. So if you have children listening to the podcast, they have to leave now. They cannot participate.
Or in-laws.
So you guys know in The Men Who Stare at Goats, there's the one scene where George Clooney and Ewan McGregor wake up and they're in hospital gowns and they get up and they wander out onto the base to see what's going on. And it's a long shot, but they walk out of the base and they're in hospital gowns and you see the Clooney butt and the McGregor butt. And Ewan McGregor does a lot of nudity. He's naked in a lot of his movies. He's sort of infamous for it.
That's why you love him.
Well, I was thinking, you know, nudity is really an issue in movies, specifically American movies, because it means you're going to get a certain rating. Male nudity, by the way, like you rarely see that.
Only in The Crying Game. It's the only movie with a penis.
Well, you might not want to bring that up because this might be your pick. Because what I'm looking for are your favorite instances of nudity.
I got a good one.
Now this doesn't have to be because, you know, a chick is super hot and she takes off her clothes. I mean, that's just the easy pick. I trust you guys know.
It has to be a penis?
It can be anything. It could be a butt. It could be a chest. So here's another thing that made me think of it is I saw the trailer for the new Twilight movie. And the vampire dude is like ripping off his shirt. And then the werewolf guy is like ripping off his shirt.
Yeah.
There's all this like sort of like teen nudity, which I'm thinking that's kind of weird, but I guess it's for the girls or whatever. So it can be dudes, it can be chicks, it can be just a butt, it can be full frontal, it can be whatever. But I just want your three favorite instances of nudity in a movie. So be ready with that.
Is porn allowed?
If that's what you're going to go for. I mean, if that's, you know, it's it doesn't have to be graphic, it doesn't have to necessarily be sex, it's just nudity.
Are magazines allowed?
Well, we're not a magazine podcast, so.
Oh.
So there you go. That's tune in next week for our 3x3. We'll bring you our three favorite instances of nudity.
Tell everyone what stupid movie we're seeing.
Well, Kelly, I was going to say you'll probably have five or six favorite instances of nudity. you'll stealth those in there. So next week, I'm really psyched about this. I don't know about you guys. I am ready because we've done these kind of smaller art house movies. So next week, we're going to do a big trashy, you know, a big budget movie. We're going to see 2012.
It's almost like we're spending that budget.
it's a different thing for us. I mean, normally, you know, this is different.
Where the wild things are wasn't true, but fear of the wild.
Yeah, but come on, this is like all this CG, and it's Roland Emmerich, and it's going to be terrible, don't you think? Like, it's probably going to be horrible.
Hey, spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's about a Mayan apocalypse. How can
spoiler,
that suck?
Spoiler. Some of us haven't seen the trailer.
Do you know what the slogan is for the movie?
I think it's the day after tomorrow.
I don't. Kelly Wan, tell us the tagline for...
The tagline for 2012, they may have changed it, but it was, we should have listened. Which,
okay.
To me, is the problem, is that we are listening. And that's why we're seeing the dumb-ass movie.
Well, actually, they've tightened that up, and it is...
Plus, we can't do anything about it, is my prediction. Did you guys see... what's that Nicolas Cage one? Where the world ends?
Knowledge. Knowing.
Leaving us things.
We have to do it.
They've tightened up the tagline. It is, from what I see now, we were warned. So it's not quite as elegant as what you were saying.
Oh, so it's not as much an admonishment of us for, oh, you guys didn't listen to us. We made this movie about the apocalypse.
All right, so tune in next week for 2012 and 9 instances of awesome nudity. And we'll talk to everyone then.
You're so crazy, 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 you're so crazy.
East to west, mic check, 1, 2, 3, 4. Teriyaki no kotoba, Neptune's no beat up. Kiss to up, to the bars, and shake up. Shift to するぐらいに living large, now we're not.